When Foz wears glasses, I think he's so astute. Like that is, he looks smarter. Hardly. He looks smarter than everyone else in the room.
Hardly.
And then we do a podcast recording and none of us sound smart.
This is true.
You're listening to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, a travel podcast with host Stephen Seagraves, Foz Mamoon, and Seth Miller.
Hello, and welcome to episode 581 of Dots, Lines, and Destinations. I'm Stephen Seagraves, joined today by Mr. Seth Miller and Mr. Foz Mamoon. Gentlemen.
Howdy. Hey.
You know, they can't see you waving, so that doesn't help.
Yeah, but you can see me waving, and that's what's important.
Exactly. That's just a taught you.
Oh, yeah. Well, happy holidays. It was Passover, and it's now Easter. We're recording this on Easter Sunday.
So. Still is Passover.
When does Passover end?
Thursday.
Thursday. Okay.
8-day holiday.
8 days. I didn't realize it was 8 days.
Huh. Oh, yeah.
Didn't know that. Anyway, hope everyone is having a good Passover and a happy Easter. Is it a happy holiday or is it a reflection holiday? I don't know a lot about it.
Like many of the Jewish holidays, it boils down to they tried to kill us, we won, let's eat. Bit of reflection. This is actually comes with some historical insights more. It's sort of, it is biblical, but also ties into the many other bits of oppression the Jews have faced over the years. And so it's one where it is very much a celebratory meal situation, but also a scenario where you're implored to delve into the story and expound upon it. So telling stories and, you know, having those conversations is more favored here than in some of the other ones where it's just a more simple tell the story, be done.
Gotcha. Okay.
It makes sense.
Yeah. Very cool. It's interesting. I didn't know a ton about Passover, so that's good. Yeah. Let's talk about Iran. There's a lot happening, not happening, interesting stuff. So Ryanair has said that it's okay on fuel until May.
Yeah, O'Leary put out, or I don't know if it was an interview or a statement or whatever, but he's basically said they're probably okay on fuel for the next couple months, and they're hedged on 80% of their fuel for the next year. But if fuel prices keep going up, there's that exposure that they have that may force them to reconsider some new routes, which, you know, routes get expensive, you stop operating them if they're marginal, and that makes sense. One of the things I thought was interesting about the comment of like, oh, we're hedged, we're going to be fine, is like, those hedging contracts are cool and all, but like, if there's no fuel to deliver, someone might not deliver it.
Yeah.
Like, cool. What are they going to pay you back for not delivering the fuel? I don't know. But like, what's the contract actually get you?
Yeah. I mean, I guess like, you know, Ryanair flies into a lot of secondary airports. So from a fuel standpoint, are the major airports going to get prioritized over the secondary airports?
Oh, like from a fuel delivery perspective, you mean?
Yeah.
Because they fly to like, what is it, Frankfurt Hahn? Like, is Frankfurt Hahn going to get jet fuel compared to good old Frankfurt?
Yeah. Exactly.
That's a good question. I don't know.
Neither do I. And I mean, right, there's also some news out of Italy issued a couple notams this past week saying that they named four airports. I got Venice, Bologna, and Linate, Milan, and there's a fourth one listed, I forget, but that like aircraft running short haul flights can only take on 2,000 liters of fuel.
Huh. Interesting.
Which isn't a ton. It's like about 500 gallons.
So you're just going, you got to go, if you
got to tanker in. Further,
yeah, you got to tanker in. Yeah.
You got to tanker in. And like short is defined as something like a 3-hour trip.
Oh, wow.
So, well, which kind of makes sense, because if you think of it as a 6 or 7 hour trip, you can tanker that much in a single aisle aircraft.
Yeah.
Right. 737 can bring that much fuel with it. Can start wherever else with 6 hours of fuel, fly 3 hours to get there, top off the tanks for, you know, reserves or whatever, and then head back out.
Yeah.
But we talked about this last week a little bit too. People are, you know, more tankering happening, which is expensive, maybe not as expensive as buying fuel at spot prices in places where it's gotten very expensive also, but it's also, you know, operationally expensive in that if you're flying extra fuel around, you're using extra fuel to fly extra fuel around.
Yeah. I mean, you're basically a flying gas tank and you're paying to get that fuel off the ground, which requires more power, which requires more fuel.
Yeah. So,
yeah. It's not good. And then let's talk about Korea. Korean Airlines is in crisis mode, right?
When it comes to their CEO came out and basically said, we're in crisis mode. We don't know what's going on. Not we don't know what's going on, but that they basically are very worried about what the future is going to bring. Actually, the president or prime minister, I forget what they call their elected leader, basically also said it's time to get, you know, convert much more of our just general infrastructure to renewable energies because we can't be dependent on this stuff. But at the same time, the airline is very concerned, and that's a market where it's a lot of long haul operations.
Yeah. Yeah. I saw that also, like, there's some general chaos in the Philippines around just regular gasoline. Yeah. Philippines and a few other places in Southeast Asia where supply is very scarce. And then New Zealand says it may not be able to raise fares much more.
Yeah, this was Brian Summers had an interview with the CEO of Air New Zealand. Came out last week, and it was just one of the interesting bits was that, you know, you hear like Delta, United, Bastion, and Kirby saying, you know, we've got price and power, we can drive up prices, we're still protecting, you know, we recognize that our costs are going up, but we're able to recoup it. And then you get someone like Air New Zealand saying, yeah, we actually can't recoup all our costs anymore.
I mean, who do you believe?
Both.
I tend to believe Air New Zealand more than Kirby or Bastion. Like, I think Kirby and Bastion are making a play to say we're safe when it comes to the market to protect the stock price.
I mean, Kirby and Bastion are doing what American doesn't, right? They're exuding confidence
when there is none.
when there shouldn't be, right? And you know, it could be bordering on securities fraud. I'm not saying it is, but where's the truth, right? We all see, like, United and Delta have a lot of international operations where they have to buy fuel abroad. They're going to be paying a lot more premium for that.
And suggesting that you can just raise fuel prices or just raise prices of tickets to cover that, I think is nonsensical.
No, there's a limit to how much people are willing to pay.
Yeah,
absolutely. And we'll talk. I'm not sure we've gotten there yet.
Yeah, but
I think we've gotten there to an extent, and we've masked it by the introduction of basic economy.
Basic economy, and now I think United, another part of the story that we're talking about is bag fees. United and JetBlue are raising bag fees. Like, that is another cost for people that's on top of their ticket. Like, and I'm sure United.
Not if you get the credit card.
Oh, well, yeah. Well, that's great. I mean, you can make money on the backside, right? Foz, I want to smack you through the screen.
I read somewhere that Marriott's liability for a Bonvoy is $4 billion.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm going to hold on to my 1.5 million Marriott points just to screw them.
Don't worry, it's only worth about $5.
Yeah, it's like $3.
Also, like, what's that liability actually matter?
Yeah, I can just carry that on the books. Who cares, right?
But that, you know, raises an interesting question, right? If the airlines probably have similar liabilities, if they declare bankruptcy, does all that just get absolved?
I think the answer is yes.
Oh, well, only if you wipe the points off the books,
right? And then what happens with the banking relationships?
They die, and so airlines won't do that.
Right, but they've basically put themselves in a corner is where I'm getting at.
Yeah.
Right? They have to do something, and they, like, the fundamental problem here is awards have gotten too expensive where people aren't burning.
Yeah.
Right, yes. But it's cheaper to buy a lot of these tickets, and I think that's what we're going to start seeing in the not-too-distant future is a drop in reward prices.
You think? I mean, maybe.
I don't.
I think they'll make them more expensive in the hopes that, like, people will use, they'll make them harder to get. I mean, we've already seen that. And we can talk about that in the bonus topics. I want to save that for the bonus topics with United specifically. But let's talk about bag fees. So JetBlue and United have both increased bag fees
for about $5.
$5 a bag, right?
Yeah.
I think Delta's probably not far behind this, honestly. Maybe American in the future.
I would assume everybody else will try to follow unless something, you know, unless either United or JetBlue decides to back off it. But, you know, give it a week and everybody else will come along. It's usually how it goes.
I think here's my problem with all of this, and even the fares, right? This is, again, one of these crisis points in the economy where ticket prices, bag fees, they're not going to go away when this crisis ends. Like, it's just now, that's just going to be the price. And the only people who pay that price is us. Like, I just, like, it's not like some, you know, white knight comes along and says, no, bag fees are going away. Kirby's going to see that increase in revenue and say it stays.
Yeah, he got rid of change fees, though, you know?
Yay. On tickets that don't originate out of the U.S.
Yeah, everybody, United was more generous before, right? And backed off because no, the other countries and other airlines in the U.S. all backed off.
Yeah. But United doesn't actually clearly state that it's only for tickets based out of the U.S.
Yeah, if you look more in the terms.
If you look at most of the advertising, there's no asterisks.
Yeah.
And the only way you would ever know is if you went digging and read the fare rules.
Foz has this giant office because he's building a class action right there behind him. yeah, I mean, I'm with you, Foz. I agree. There's nothing that says this is only for U.S. tickets.
And it's not even all U.S. Like, there's international markets where they don't charge change fees. But so it's really hard to know where it is and where it isn't.
And is it baked into the fare rule or the contract of carriage? Like, where is it baked?
It's in the fare rules.
Fare rules.
So you've got to purchase the ticket before you
can. No, you can view the fare rules during the purchase.
Okay, that's good.
But you have to know where to look and what to look for. Like, yeah. 99% of the people wouldn't even know to look for
it. It's not easily stated in the, like, on the confirmation screen before you click buy.
Yep. There are change fees associated with this ticket. Yeah. San Francisco, our favorite airport, my favorite airport, is getting some runway changes. Go ahead, Seth. Tell me about it.
Yeah, so they're not quite entirely doing away with parallel approaches, but more or less. It's going to become more staggered. And it was initially pitched as happening because of construction ongoing with some of the other runways. But now, like, the statement from the FAA was, we're doing this as part of the construction mitigation efforts, and we don't plan to go back when the construction ends.
And so it takes arrivals down from like 60 an hour to 40 an hour or something.
It's 54 to 35 or 36, something like that.
So 19, right? Off, 19 an hour away, taken away, which is significant. I think people are like, oh, it's not a lot. But that's a lot when you are.
When it's a third of the capacity, it's a lot.
Yeah. I was trying to figure this out because over the years, they've allowed the parallel approaches to become, they've always been slightly offset. And at times, you catch up, like one of the planes will catch up with the other plane during the approach, and they'll become almost parallel or close to it. And I think San Francisco is one of the few places where a certain TCAS, the alert system for TCAS, or knowing when a plane is too close, you're allowed to run it in a mode that doesn't alert for a lateral separation. So you can operate that. That went away maybe 3 years ago. And so I think they were getting a ton of TCAS alerts from planes on the approach. And all the FAA did was look at TCAS alert data. Because you can look that up in ADS-B. Like, it's available. Yeah. And I have a feeling they looked that up and they go, this is a problem. With all the other airports we've had with, you know, incursions and actual accidents, they said this is too many TCAS alerts. That's my working theory.
But, you know, I would argue that if the pilots get in the habit of not paying as much attention to TCAS alerts in San Francisco, they become complacent.
I don't disagree, but you're allowed to run it in the non-lateral mode. Like, that was at a point you were allowed to do that. So they wouldn't register TCAS alerts at all. They would just keep visual separation. And then that was removed, and you had to keep the lateral separation piece in place. And they were ignoring it. You're right, Foss. But I think the bigger problem as SFO is actually runway incursion than it is the parallel approaches. Because we've had, I mean, the big incidents that have happened at SFO have been events where pilots weren't paying attention, landed on taxiways. They landed almost on top of another airplane or with crossing traffic or with planes taxiing out onto the runway that shouldn't have been out on the runway. So that's that would have been what I said was, like, it's actually, we need to slow operations by a certain percentage because there's too many planes moving around the field. That would have been my thing. So anyway, that was a long winded way of saying
it's going to be interesting to me to see what United does in terms of operating capacity there, right? Like SFO is a category 2 airport, so it is not slot controlled, but is slot coordinated.
Okay.
The FAA helps airlines to coordinate operations and make sure that things are, you know, it's like Newark and like O'Hare. And so there's some challenges there in terms of, like, truly, if they have to cut a third of the peak arrivals, like, is it only some hours? Is it all hours? I haven't run the graph yet of hourly operations in the airport. And, you know, I'm sure some of it could be distributed, but it's a major hub and United runs a lot of operations there. They're going to have problems. And then there's, you know, Alaska Airlines also runs a lot of operations there.
I was going to say, they're the one that doesn't have to worry about this.
Yeah.
Because they're removing a third of their flights anyway. I mean, I don't know if you guys saw this, but they were like reducing their Alaska flying. And I can't remember the frequencies, Seth. I don't know if you have it up. It's so Kona to San Jose, Lihue to Oakland, and Lihue to San Jose are all going away. And this is on top of the previous San Francisco SFO reductions that they've already had. I think the only East Coast flight they have is Newark now out of SFO. It's kind of wild that Alaska's kind of deflating their San Francisco operations.
Well, is the demand just not there? Or is there just too much capacity? Right. When you're looking at how much capacity in Hawaii exists out of the Bay Area now versus 15 years ago, it's a lot more.
Alaska still has JFK, this is telling me.
JFK, San Francisco, not LA.
Oh, that's what it is. Okay. And do they run it year round, San Francisco, JFK, year round?
Yeah, it's like two or three a day.
Okay. So I misspoke. So they have two New York flights from San Francisco, but that's it.
Two markets. JFK, I'm looking at June. So 100 flights for the month of June is 3 a day. And then less than daily to Newark. DCA is daily. Honolulu is double. Anchorage is 1. Kona and Lihue and Maui are all daily. So there's still some operations there, but the number of departures has gone down.
Yeah.
And when you look at San Jose and Oakland, right, they're probably competing with Southwest as well.
Sure, out of Oakland, for sure.
Yeah. And probably San Jose.
Mm.
Yeah, I would say the other one, just along those lines of weird and interesting cuts on the West Coast, Delta's not bringing back LA Anchorage this summer because of setting fuel prices.
Interesting. I didn't realize that. Yeah, I didn't actually realize they have that flight, but
it's a seasonal.
I just like San Francisco is a weird one because if United is going to reduce by that much, if they have to, I would think it's some of this regional flying that they do on. Don't they have CR2s still out of SFO?
United?
Yeah.
Thought they were all, I think, very limited. I thought they were all in
Denver and
Chicago.
I think they might still have some like the Sacramento and stuff.
You know, like Eureka and things like that. Like I thought were CR2s. I'm going to look right now.
I'm looking.
You're looking. You're looking.
They've got a couple. Fresno, Monterey, Redmond, Reno, and San Luis Obispo. But 240 departures, 8 a day. It's a very small population.
They do Redmond with a CR2.
RDD. Wow. Excuse me. Redding, not Redmond. Oh.
Okay, I was like, man, that's brutal. It's only 2 hours, but still.
It's 2 hours you'll never forget.
Yeah, so and I'm just interested in what United cuts out of there. Like, I guess it's E-175 flying that you would reduce, maybe.
Or some long hauls. This also goes back to our conversation last week or 2 weeks ago with the new Coast, the Coastliner, which is a much smaller plane than they're currently using for transcons, and how do you maintain capacity? Yeah. If you've got they would have to literally double the number of departures to maintain the same number of seats. If everything went to the XLR, they have to double the number of departures to maintain the same number of seats compared to the mix of wide bodies and single aisle today.
Yeah. And they're not going to do that.
They're probably not going to do that. And they're taking away slots. They're not going to have these slots to work in. Ned Russell actually raised an interesting point, is why don't they make these airports level 3 slot controlled airports?
And like actually assign the slots.
Yeah. And make them tradable and all those things. And they're sort of tradable today, like the airline, but it's not enforced by the FAA. So the airlines sort of agree to do it.
Yeah.
But it's an interesting question. I don't know what the process is to get there and what like other implications there are. I think it becomes more restrictive for international airlines if you end up as level 3 versus level 2.
Because they have to apply, I'm guessing. And
yeah, they have to get slot. They have to like, you know, own the slots versus today, you know, a U.S. Like when the FAA did trim capacity at Newark and is working now on trimming capacity in Chicago, which I haven't, someone said they thought they saw that loaded. I haven't seen it yet. Or updates from the FAA saying that the meeting's even completed. But you know, when those things happen, the international airlines are exempted.
Hmm. Interesting. Yeah. I mean, could United theoretically say, okay, we'll put the Coastliner on Newark LAX and then put wide bodies on Newark San Francisco to get the capacity they need with fewer frequencies?
I mean, sure, they could.
But part of the demand at San Francisco is like nearly hourly flights, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, look, San Francisco is one of those markets where no matter how many seats you put in, it will fill up.
Yeah,
you know, front
just that back. Many people.
Yeah. I don't think Newark is going to be the issue, right? I think all the other places are going to be the issue, right? The flights to L.A., to San Diego, to Denver, to Chicago, to Houston. I think those are the ones that we're going to start seeing reductions of. Seattle, Portland, right? All the other things. But it's okay. It could be okay if they upgauge, right? Maybe they go from 319s and 320s to 738s and 739s.
Maybe they start L.A. to Portland instead.
Maybe they get some Max 10s eventually, right?
They're going to have to do something with the Max 10s at this point because they're not doing Coastliner with that.
Right, which that was the original plan. And fine, those will be, whenever they show up, will be a just fine domestic whatever airplane. You can keep upgauging. If you keep upgauging, eventually you have to you run into challenges in certain smaller markets that can't support that. And so you need the smaller planes around. That's why there's still the handful of CR2s popping in and out every day. And, you know, they're not based there anymore. So you work them through the network, but you still got to do it. And either you lose markets or you have to maintain in sort of like these less than ideal, less than optimal operations. And it's not clear that they have a plan to do any of it.
Well, I mean, I don't think they've probably figured it out. These changes just got announced.
Yeah. But I mean, yeah. And they're going to do something similar to O'Hare, which they've now known about for a little while. That is still pending. They haven't filed changes if it hasn't.
And part of San Francisco, right? They can stretch out the windows as well, the banks. It's really the worst time of the day is the mornings in San Francisco because of all the international flying. So if they had a bunch of the inbounds come in a little earlier, they could start stretching, you know, in the mornings, it's the inbounds are the bigger problem.
So you extend your connection bank, which helps a little, but it makes you less efficient relative to other connections.
It does, but if you're the only game in town, like United is for a lot of those routes, it's not a big deal.
Yeah, I mean, it makes me think of like they had like a 7:30 and a 9:30, I think, departure from Portland, but they only had one departure bank in that time from San Francisco. So you could hit the departure bank with the 9:30.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think tightening it up might work. But I think you're right now, Foz. I'm thinking about it, like places like Houston and Denver where they do every other, you know, every hour and a half they have a flight. I think those go down to every 2 hours or 3 hours. Yeah. I think we've killed this one. United's first A321neo with Starlink is in the air.
Yes.
It's good. Is this the first mainline plane?
No, they've got some they've got some Max in.
Okay.
Have started already.
That's cool. That's really good news for them. I mean, it's good news for flyers for sure.
It is a better is a better in-flight internet experience.
Yeah. And then Delta is, I guess, not going to go with Starlink. They are holding out for somebody else.
They've signed or announced an agreement that in 2028-ish, they will install Amazon Leo on 500 aircraft. They didn't specify which aircraft or a lot of other details. Also, Amazon Leo only has about 200 satellites in orbit right now, and it's going to take a while to get to a functional network, but they're building a lot and ramping up launches any day now. So we'll see how that goes. One of the reports has it on new domestic aircraft. So they've got like the pending MAX 10 order and some other orders pending. And so it sounds like it's a longer term installation on new planes, not necessarily replacing existing. But that's rumored innuendo, not confirmed by the company that I've seen. And certainly the existing providers have reason to be concerned.
Do you think this was just like some sweetheart deal that Delta got, like cheaper pricing than Starlink?
I think pricing certainly has something to do with it. I think Starlink has pretty strict rules about what you can and can't do as an airline in terms of how it gets presented to passengers. And then there's arguably reason to think that there's some density of service that becomes too much, and that if everybody is using Starlink, that's a problem.
Yeah.
So with Alaska and United both all in on Starlink right now, splitting things might not be a bad idea. Also, Starlink, among the limitations they have is typically, and it changed actually, Southwest also just signed for a few hundred planes on Starlink. Until Southwest announced theirs, Starlink SpaceX was typically not interested in anything other than a full fleet deployment because they didn't want to be associated with, you know, the mixed passenger experience. There is one Air Canada has on their Q400s, a handful of those has Starlink based out of Billy Bishop, but and otherwise is mostly a Intel, well, no, SES, 2KU, and otherwise the new multi-orbit, whatever. But that was one where my understanding is Air Canada was not allowed to mention SpaceX or Starlink in the press release because it wasn't a full fleet deal. So they had to say, you know, we're putting in a super fast Leo solution, wink and a nod, go figure out what it is yourself. Obviously Southwest announced a partial fleet fit. And so there's some flexibility there depending if you're important enough, I guess, but
yeah, I gotta wonder about like, just making this work. If you're an air carrier, Delta, I guess maybe was forced into a corner then with Amazon a little bit.
Yeah. The in-flight connectivity industry is relatively insular in terms of who works there and does what. And the guy doing sales, at least in North America for Amazon Leo today, is the same guy that sold 2KU a decade ago and is well known and well respected by many. So it's not entirely surprising,
yeah.
That at least it's not complete. It's not a complete unknown.
Yeah,
I would say. And so there's some, you know, relationships there that may have helped.
Yeah, but I think this puts Delta at a disadvantage for the first time against United in a very long time, for years,
because their offering won't be available for a while,
and not even on the full fleet.
Yeah,
right. Like Starlink is pretty awesome. The few flights I've had with it it's spectacular.
Yeah, I think Delta would likely argue, as would Viasat, its main service provider these days. Yeah, most passengers are able to do everything, and it's free already. They're doing what they want to do, and it's not a big deal. Passengers may disagree. I would in certain circumstances, maybe not in others. Depends on what you're using the connection for. Excuse me. But, yeah.
I mean, I think that's the thing with the piece that I take away from this is Delta seems like a more segmented carrier when it comes to their coverage and their in-flight capabilities. Like they seem like they have different products across different airplanes. Maybe it's like American, I guess. Is that just a misconception on my part?
No, it's accurate, and especially for long haul versus short haul. Short haul is basically all the same now.
Okay.
Except the 717s.
Yes, except for the regional jets and the 717s. Those were supposed to be done by now, to be honest. And there have been some delays in those rollouts. You know, one of the questions was, given the delays, will it be on the 717s? Would you at this point, at some point, the GoGo network, they're still using the GoGo air-to-ground network. Mm-hmm. At some point, that has to go away. GoGo applied for an extension. Actually, it was supposed to be like this week, I think, or maybe it was May. First week of May, there was GoGo applied for an extension from the FCC to keep the transmitters on. And I don't know if that's been granted or not. So that would keep the network available a little longer. But like, I can't imagine Delta would be happy with taking those planes offline for 18 months minimum. Hmm. But again, like United with the new Dreamliners, you got to put something on it.
Yeah.
I mean, to your point of Viasat and Delta claiming that most people can do what the same thing that Starlink can do, the difference is on a Starlink plane, your experience is more like it is on the ground.
Yes.
Then, and that's the whole thing, right? The amount of friction goes down with Starlink, so it becomes a much more consistent experience across the board.
Agreed. There's a friction thing. There's like, also, if you're just streaming movies, you probably won't know the notice a difference except for that initial buffering. If you're doing anything interactive or real time, you're more likely to notice a difference.
Yep.
And so it really just depends on what you're using it for. Even like doom scrolling, they've gotten pretty good about the lazy load, right? And as you scroll down, it pulls up more stuff in the background. But I mean, like I was on a jet, yeah, I was on Breeze and JetBlue last week, both of which used the Viasat network. And like, it was mostly fine, but I was basically browsing social media and running flight radar. I wasn't VPN'd into a client and trying to do real work.
Yeah. I mean, that's, I think for me, it's like, okay, if I send emails, it's great. Like if I get decent connectivity and then, but then I fly someone like United sometimes, like poor Ed, and I'm actually trying to do something where I'm, you know, oh, I need to look something up in real time on a client's network. And it just, it's so slow. It times out, like the request times out. Like that's, it's like, well, then I can't do work. Like that's not, emails is one thing, but doing actual connectivity type work, it sucks. Anyway, let's talk about SkyWest. They allegedly held a plane for the CEO's daughter.
This was like 2 weeks ago.
Here's what I need to know. Were there hot nuts involved?
This isn't South Korea, sir.
Yeah, but I completely derailed both of you.
It is SkyWest, so the idea that there would be hot nuts on board is...
It might be in this stretch. It was a few weeks ago, and it was Delta's last flight. SkyWest operator from Salt Lake City to St. George that night, and a number of folks took onto social media to basically say that they were being held for the CEO's daughter because one person boarded. SkyWest kept claiming it was multiple passengers, but only one person boarded, and the pilot came on and made a comment about his boss told him to hold the plane. And so they took an hour-long delay, and SkyWest is saying, oh, no, we held this for multiple passengers, yet the public is saying something completely different.
I'm kind of like, even if it wasn't, I mean, I don't know, how many of us have missed a flight because they didn't hold the plane?
All of us?
So,
yeah, sure, yeah.
I mean, it could be multiple people. I've seen United hold planes. I don't know. If it's the last flight of the night.
Last flight of the night, but if there's one seat open.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Right, like, we'll see if we ever get the truth on this, but it's interesting.
Yeah. But, yeah. It's great.
Also, like, just because the boss said hold the flight doesn't mean it was...
That could mean multiple things, right? Like, oh, I'm being told by the guys upstairs. Like, does that mean God had an intervention with the pilot? I don't know. Like, no, probably not. It's probably ATC.
They didn't teleport to a Waffle House, Steven.
Oh, my God. Like I said on Blue Sky, the people who go to Waffle House are typically inebriated. So anything they say should be taken with a very fine grain of salt.
I sometimes go for breakfast if I'm traveling to a client that has one nearby.
Have you been drinking the night before?
And I'm sober when I do it. did I drink the night before? Probably.
Probably. Yeah, exactly.
So possible.
You teleported there. All right. Well, Patreon supporters, stick around. We're going to talk about United's premium basic play that they're doing and some of the award changes. And we're going to talk about Alaska Airlines and their premium play and JetBlue and their subscription changes.
I want to be very clear. Last week when Alaska Airlines announced the premium stuff, Stephen said he had thoughts. And so we're going to hear all those thoughts.
I always have thoughts.
I'm excited to hear them, though. You've laid down that we're going to have some thoughts on Alaska Airlines.
You are never excited to talk to me. So, if you're not a Patreon supporter, thanks for listening. We appreciate it. You can always leave us a comment. We'd like to hear from you, and we'll talk to you next time. Happy travels.
Take care.
Catch you later.